Welcome back, everybody. It's been a little while. We're here with the podcast.
Let's dive in.
So my dad was here and he had a football game on and they had local news that came up after it. And it was just on the television. So I saw something that I hadn't seen in a while with these local news stories. And one of them was breaking down these, I think, high school football players going into college. And they were talking about their GPAs. And one guy was like, dude, I got a 4.0. I was like, that's amazing. The other guy was like, I have a 4.6. And the guy's like, yeah, I have a 4.8.
Yeah.
And I was like, silly goose. Like, they've been devaluing like objective standards of merit forever. And not to insult these particular guys, but it just caused me to think, because they do this in college as well. I went to University of Virginia for grad school, and the kid that fell asleep in the front row got the lowest possible score, which was a B-.
Yeah.
Like, you can't do worse than a B-. He fell asleep just like literally in front of the professor because we had assigned seating and would just snore. It was ridiculous. That basically there is no reason for high schools and colleges not to inflate the living hell out of the grades that their students get, because if they don't do it, somebody else will. Those students will have better results to employers and colleges that don't know the difference. And then they will have worse results to show for like why you should go to this high school or this district or this college, you know? So it's just a race to the bottom in terms of these numbers mean nothing. And what used to be literally the absolute top of 4.0 is apparently you can just get
five. Yeah,
now.
I think MIT is out of five. Because my friend's like, I got a 5.0. I was like, that's not a thing.
So, it's going to be six it's pretty soon.
Well, Wharton had a thing, which I thought was like at the time inflated, but you're making me realize now maybe that's just how it is, or maybe they've gone even further. It was 30% get A plus A's, A minuses, 40% get B plus B's, B minuses, 30% get C plus or lower. But no one's really getting an F. So like the worst you could do is get out of Wharton with straight C's. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was like, that's great inflation. You know what I mean? You have 70% of people with B minuses or higher in a world where I thought it was supposed to be
to F.
Like as many people are getting A's, you don't want that many people getting F's, but it's like, it's a thing that can happen.
Yeah.
And now you're making me wonder if because coming from our high school, I felt like that was not the case, that I thought high school was harder than college. And so I wonder if all colleges are just like that.
Where you
just
think get 70% college actually people. Started it before high school.
That's what I wonder if just 70% of people get B minuses or better all across the top colleges.
It makes more sense because college is more competitive. It's like most people don't choose their high school. But if you're going to college, you're making a choice.
It was just totally possible to get D's at our high school. It was not hard.
Falling asleep at the beginning of class was a D and an F.
Yeah.
Like that existed.
I tried my hardest on an AP physics test and got a D. Like, I don't know what to say. It was just totally doable. You know what I mean? I managed to pull it out with other tests and quizzes and shit. But like you had to try or you were going to fail.
Yeah. I also don't like the idea of grading on a curve for the upper limit as well. Like if what we're talking about is, did you master the material? You know what I mean? Like, or do you know physics well? Can you get the right answer on this? Like, okay, there is some merit to saying we're going to put it on a curve and we're going to say who's the absolute best. But like,
sorry, that's the Wharton School of Business that did this. The engineering school did not do this.
Did not grade on any curves.
I had a friend in engineering who I will stand by this. He got a 3.82. I had like a 3.9 something in Wharton. Hands down smarter than me. Mm-hmm. Every Wharton class he took, he got an absolute A, smashed it. And if I'd had to take his engineering classes, I would not have just coasted to an A.
Yeah.
But they were just on different curves. And then he applied to all the same jobs that the Wharton kids did. And he had a 3.82. And no one understood that was more impressive than, I don't remember mine, but like the 3.9 something that I had. And it sucked for him. And he's like, I went to the wrong school. I'm like, he wasn't a dick about it. He's like, I would have your resume if I just went to the Wharton school. I was like, you don't have to convince me. I know this.
Yeah.
He ended up having a harder time getting a job and had to go to a, quote unquote, less prestigious company because of it, which is dumb, literally just because the engineering school hadn't had that same grade inflation.
And the same thing is occurring. I mean, there's ratemyprofessor.com, which even existed when we were in school, which is you can just find out who gives the A's, like who doesn't do the curve or who has an easier curve.
Yeah, I did that for sure with my electives. Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, I was super interested in the nursing class I took. But
you also took Egyptology, right?
That one was legit, actually. Yeah. You've reversed them. I took the nursing class because it was everybody got an A. I just actually thought Greek or I think Egyptian it's cool mythology
too.
Is interesting.
I think it's really cool.
So in the
I don't think it has any bearing on your ability to perform at the hedge fund that you went to and should not have been factored into your 3.9.
Oh,
anything.
Yeah, yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean?
No, like, for sure. I was just, dude, in between accounting and statistics, I was trying to like keep my eyes open. So yeah. Learning about Anubis was actually interesting.
I'm all for liberal arts education. I just don't think that representing it in the number for a hedge fund is of any
use. Oh, no. If I had taken an extremely hard biochemistry class instead of Egyptology and gotten a worse grade because of it, it would have hurt my chances of getting a job.
Yeah.
So you just don't do that. And yeah, especially when they came out with a website that said how hard a course was. I mean, a lot of people took geology.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody's got a 4.6 today, so you're not even close to the top.
Dude, I was actually, what was I thinking about the other day? I'm so happy that I don't have to have a resume. I was talking to somebody about updating their resume and like how to frame the bullshit you did so that it looks good. And I remember that. I remember being like, how do I frame landscaping? How do I frame cutting a lawn? You know what I mean? And then I had an internship because my parents knew a guy and I wanted to be a sports agent. I was at a sports agency. I didn't do anything. I made him a MySpace page.
Yeah.
It's a schmoozing job and it's a job that requires a law degree.
Acquisition.
Yeah. So it's like, listen, I'm not going to write a contract. I'm not a lawyer. You don't bring me into schmoozing because I'm not 21. So I did nothing. And it's like, all right, I'm going to convince all these investment banks somehow that I did something of value when I really just fucked around for however long that internship was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad that that phase is over where you have to convince someone you're worthy of an interview.
It's so interesting because I think at that stage in your life, at least, I don't know if it's still the case, when we were going through, there was a lot of advice like, join these clubs, do this thing. It looks good on your resume.
Yeah.
It's true in business. When you have to focus so much on marketing, it means you haven't put enough into the product. You know, like if everything you're going is how you talk about it and discuss it in the ad.
But it also works is the weird part. If you don't play an instrument or a sport, I think it's pretty tough to get into an Ivy League school because everybody has the same high school GPAs. Well,
let me be clear. Or have a fascinating life story, which is not really in your control up to the age 18. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, we talked about this. People write in, how do I write my college essay?
It's like,
it's tough. You've not done
my dad was in the Peace Corps. I was born in this random African country, traveled around the world, speak three languages. Like, I didn't make that
choice. I'm from the suburbs. You know what I mean? Yeah. My dad works in Pennsylvania and that's my life. I don't have a story where I went to Africa and dug a well.
Is it possible? And then I think this is part of the issue is that like, how does one distinguish between the long-term capacity of an 18-year-old effectively? It's like, it's tough to do.
I mean, we talked about this. They're also trying to figure out if you can follow the rules. So like, you're just as smart as I am. You made different choices in high school in terms of courses that didn't factor in what a college would look at. And so that eliminated you from certain colleges. Well, that's what they're doing on purpose.
What Ben's trying to say is I didn't get into his school when I applied.
No, what I'm saying is you didn't take Spanish?
I didn't take Spanish and I didn't take the top math class either.
Yeah, but you didn't have 4 years of a language, which was a requirement for the school because you weren't interested in that.
Which is so funny because the Spanish that people graduate speaking.
No, this is what I'm saying is I got to write first year saxophone. I wasn't good at saxophone. That's the point I'm making. You like play sports, but it doesn't matter if you're good at them. And you play music, but it doesn't matter if you're good at them. Because we're not actually in the Philharmonic. And so then you just have this resume when you're applying to a college that checks all the boxes. Mm-hmm. What they're really seeing is, are you willing to jump through hoops? Because when you come here, we're going to have you jump through hoops. So you can go to a job where they're going to ask you to jump through hoops.
Yeah.
And what you're doing is you're saying, I'm really good at following instructions. Even if I don't want to play an instrument, I'll do it to get in. Yeah. Even though I don't want to take Spanish, dude. I had no interest in taking Spanish. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a monkey who will jump when we tell them to. Like, that's part of the process, I think. It's basically the GPA and then the hoop jumping. And that's how you get.
This is what happened. I went to a 1-year program at UVA and they were interviewing us at the end of September, beginning of October.
Yeah, before you'd learned anything.
We just got here. There's no possible way that you are paying for what happens here. Yeah. You know what I mean? I might screw this up completely. Like, what you're paying for is the fact that one, you know, hopefully they did some diligence and selected people. But really, it's just like, I performed enough tricks to get this college to take me so that satisfies you that you can come here. And it's not the worst heuristic for them. You know what I mean? Like going to some of the top schools, if you're McKinsey or Bain and BCG and just saying, we are only going to hire out of here because we don't really know what makes a good person, but it helps if they just follow instruction have a fairly high IQ, which seems to be somewhat necessary to getting the top grades.
Yeah, like, it's also not a bad process because most people don't want employees that question everything. They actually want people who just do what they're told excellently.
Except Elon Musk, who, like, you don't have to go to college. Correct. You don't have to do any of this. We're looking for people that built rockets in high school, and I don't care if you failed out of science class. Like,
I would be really interested to see what their actual employee pool looks like, because I would bet it's not that dissimilar from a more normal company.
Maybe.
Like, I think they probably do have the high school dropout who just started building AI robots at 15, and I bet he's surrounded by a lot of people who went to Stanford.
MIT and Stanford.
Yeah.
Well, I think that it's possible that some of the technical things like MIT have retained some sort of selection system that filters for, I have a genuine interest in science, and you can see that by my participation. This versus yours was, oh, I don't actually care about the saxophone.
I also think SpaceX wants a lot of smart people that will do what they're told.
Sure.
And they want a couple people who are going to be thinking outside the box, and maybe everyone's supposed to think outside the box within their thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're not a bunch of people in rooms working on their own crazy projects. Like, some of them do have to just be like, hey, figure out how to make this lighter. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you to do this. Do
it. Yes. Yes. They want engineers.
And by the
scientists.
Way, do it for 16 hours. In the next 16 hours, don't sleep. Like, that's the other thing that people are testing for, is how much will you
work very hard?
Work hard. Will you pull an all-nighter to get the grade? Will you pull an all-nighter to finish the project? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Sure. Sure. This is a hard tangent, but we've talked now about the dislikes going away, and it really is bad.
Oh, yeah. There.
It's really bad. But the thing that I didn't see is, if you just zoom out and be like, where was YouTube 2-3 years ago and where is it now? What has changed is that there now is an official news section that wasn't there 2-3 years ago, mm-hmm. that is right below above the fold, which, for those of you not in the internet spaces, it's the first thing that you see on desktop when you scroll in, or the thing that you see on your phone before you scroll down. So it's like right there. It's some of the prime real estate. It's got all of the headlines from the accredited news sources that they have, and there's no indication that people like it or don't like it. And I can tell you, if you zoom out, like, what's coming next, if it's not already heavily happening, is the removal of comments and the filtering of comments. Because it seems obvious that what YouTube wanted when they made that was an official message that they believe and support to get space that it didn't merit because of their algorithm.
Well, it's also funny because most YouTube videos have 93%, 96%. Mm-hmm. Likes to dislikes. And all those news videos always had 17% likes.
Yeah.
And then a massive amount, 80% well, right now it's dislikes.
Third booster helps with the Omicron variant. And what do people think? Well, I don't know. And so there's no sense when you're looking at these headlines. And by the way, I'm on YouTube. I can tell you that something like 30 to 50 times more people, depending on the size of the video, will see the headline than will actually click the video. And even fewer will get to the comments. So you're able to 30 to 50x that headline communication,
yeah.
which is such a ridiculous amplifier, and to make sure that there's no other signal saying, hey, other people find this suspicious, or other, yeah. People don't like this.
Do you think that the algorithm like tags more corporate channels?
100%.
Because I was looking at this the other day, because I'm making a video that involves Pete Davidson, and I was looking at SNL on Social Blade. They have 150 million views a month, which seems really high for a show that I don't know anyone who watches.
It's tough. I don't know about that. Here's what we can say, I think, with pretty high degree of certainty. CoffeeZilla, back when it was Coffee Break, did a breakdown of what was in they call it the trending, but it's really editor's picks, because mm-hmm. it's what the things that people at YouTube pick. And it was almost all corporate. It was all Jimmy Fallon or whatever people in SportsCenter. It was like one of the needed 50,000 views in order to show up on trending versus PewDiePie or anybody else needed a ridiculous amount, even though I don't know what they think the word trending means. Basically, like, just call it what it is. Like, we chose these and these are officially sanctioned YouTube things. And then they defended it, by the way, like when I've talked to people that like work there, like, well, actually people don't like really click the trending tab. It's like, yeah, but you tried to make them click the trending tab. Like, you were unsuessful in your attempt.
By the way, they probably would have clicked it.
That these were the things.
If you'd put the trending videos on, they probably would have clicked.
They probably would have caught steam.
Yeah. If you put the most popular videos on.
So it's just interesting, because it does seem that there is a message that that largely aligns with what mainstream media says. And by the way, it's not like YouTube has an independent fact-checking arm of YouTube that is selecting the most trustworthy sources and downgrading ones that don't pass that bar, it is just legacy media. And it doesn't matter how many times they screw up or if Russiagate was true or not. It's just like, these are factual sources that you guys can trust forever and ever. It doesn't matter what stories they've gotten wrong in the past. And that's crazy to me and a huge bummer, and seems too flagrant to be an oversight.
I mean, it doesn't matter. There's just going to be a Web3 video streaming service that eats YouTube's launch. So just chill and wait 10 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I 100% agree. But I was just zooming out going, also, oh, next up is the comments. They don't like the social part of this. They like the, this section is to cram a particular ideology down the throats of people on YouTube. And it's not the entire site, but it's like this section that didn't belong here, that didn't beat the algorithm, that now no longer has likes and dislikes. And that's what it is for.
We should keep our eye out for when the Web3 version comes out so that we can get our shit on there.
Well, you know, they've been out forever. There's been DTubes in this. And dude, I posted a couple of our videos on DTube years ago. You can be too early.
Yeah.
You can waste a lot of time on Friendster.
Periscope.
Yes. So... yeah, I agree. What else do we have here? I watched the WeWork guy. I mentioned this too, but I would just mention to the audience. He was on, I don't know if it was business, it wasn't Business Insider. I'm just thinking that because they had the big story with Dave Portnoy, but maybe it was Bloomberg or something. If you look, Google WeWork, he did his first interview in 2 years. For those of you who don't know, there was this whole issue with WeWork where it was valued at $47 billion and had raised money at that valuation. And then that price like plummeted to $9 billion because if you looked into the way they were being valued as a tech startup with some interesting software. And really they're just a commercial real estate company that leases real estate. Mm-hmm. And so through all of that, the story that was coming out was that this guy, in the midst of a collapse and employees getting fired and investors getting crushed, was walking out with basically a $1 billion golden parachute. And, you know, had that made people livid.
Yeah.
What was fascinating is I watched his interview and couldn't help but find myself feeling persuaded, if not totally, by the interview. So there's like a really interesting charisma breakdown there, but just a handful of things that I saw in one run through is that he is extremely calm. There's a moment at the end of it where the guy asks him a question that he's like, no, that's not what happened. And he starts to go, he's like, no. Let me collect myself. That actually isn't what clearly has been for 45 minutes practicing. And prior to this, practicing not getting riled up. And as well, what he does is when the guy, he asks many pointed questions. People say that you got rich off the backs of this. People say that you screwed people. He almost always goes, I really appreciate you asking that question. It gives me a chance to clarify something that a lot of people believe that. Mm-hmm. And by treating the interviewer as if he was his buddy in this quest to rectify the mistruths that had been stated, it comes across really well. And there's 100 other things that he does, but it's like a masterclass. Well, hopefully not 100,
because I don't want to make that long.
You don't have to make it.
There's 10 minutes or less.
It is a masterclass on answering hard questions. And if you walk out of there not totally convinced, that's fine. I mean, why does he do it? Well, what he says...
Why does he do the interview? This dude's got $1 billion. He's living his life.
So he said, it's plausible to me. He's like, look, when all this went down, I knew that me doing the interview then would have just created more trouble for WeWork. And I honestly just wanted them to succeed. I wanted to not be a distraction and to get out. The reason that I'm doing it now is because I wanted to do it then. And there were a lot of things that were wrong about this, just factually inaccurate about the time, about my compensation, about how it happened, why it happened, and all this kind of stuff. So he's like, I've been wanting to do this. It seems that now that WeWork is doing well, is being publicly traded, is making money, now I can come and not be a distraction from what is a successful company. It's working. We are working.
WeWork is working.
So that's what he says. And he's got answers to every single question that you might think to ask him. He's got a plausible answer for it that goes, that makes sense. And he manages it in a really skillful way. There's one other thing that I wanted to bring, which is our guy that we've played D&D with for a very long time has openings.
Oh, hard tangent.
Our DM has openings. But so I said we would love to share this because I think a lot of the people on the podcast have heard us talk about DD, maybe have not played it before. So he is running campaigns. It's for 3 to 6 players. You can come by yourself and be matched with a group, or you can bring several friends and you can have your own group. And it's essentially, the sessions are, I think, 3-hour sessions. Sometimes it can run a little bit over. It's $250 for the total of the session. That's split between the number of people that do it. So it's that flat price. And honestly, it sounds like a lot of money, but when you're looking at the amount of time and effort that goes into it and how it basically takes up an entire evening of entertainment, it really is a steal, and he's fantastic at it. So if you are interested in trying D&D, we've got a link in the description. We don't get anything from it. I truly just wanted to do this because he's good. I think you guys will like it, and he was looking to fill a couple games. You can put your name, your email. He could reach out, pair you with a group, or you can have your own, and you can try D&D. Cool? You scratching Doug.
Yeah, you got a needy dog here. I got some stuff that none of it's like particularly current events related, so I can do them now or I can save them. Is that all you got for this week?
Yeah. Cool. My notes haven't been syncing that well. I wrote some others down, but unfortunately.
So have you heard about the police IQ upper limit thing?
No.
I was researching about this.
No.
So this is a thing that people write on Reddit, so I was curious about it. The police have been reported to have a certain police departments. Obviously, police are not a federal organization. They have different jurisdictions and legislations have IQ upper limit, allegedly, because if you score too high, you're likely to get bored with police work and leave soon after undergoing costly training.
Okay.
So seems kind of weird to me because you don't necessarily not want smart people to be police officers, and also because I've never heard of any other job having that fear. You know what I mean? They don't IQ test you before you go to McDonald's. They just say, oh, you're willing to take this pay to do this job? Sure.
Well, there's and by the very way, little training in McDonald's. That's the other thing. It's not as costly to have people. Like, people come in and out of McDonald's like crazy.
Sure.
There's police academy. There's all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I would be curious to know if there's a cap on military IQs.
What you'd be looking for to find a comparison is a high training job that didn't necessarily require super high IQ or super high cognitive something.
Mm-hmm. I've never heard of any other job ever.
I know that the military has a bottom 10% that they don't take.
Well, you'd like an IQ minimum requirement for military police work.
But do you know like what the cutoff is
for maxing out? I think they said it's like 115.
Of the police academy?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought it might be higher. That's interesting.
No, it's not like 160.
Yeah, because I was going to be like, there's a number which I just go, who cares? That's fascinating. Yeah, that's not that high for them to be. Yeah, that's a bummer.
And this number, by the way.
But that's not, but there's like detectives and stuff like that. There's different roles
within police academies. Sure, the FBI, which is hard as fuck to get into as well. The other thing is this number gets quoted all the time on Reddit. If you Google it, every news organization has written about it at one point or another. I tried to track down the actual data, and this is the most interesting thing to me because I was digging into it. I couldn't find anything more recent than a local Supreme Court case. I think it was for Connecticut from 1999.
Let's throw that one out.
Well, this is the interesting thing. A guy sued because they didn't get the job because of the IQ, and got rejected and then sued, and the Supreme Court said, no, they're allowed to do this, but it was all public, right? But then nothing has been released since, which is very strange to me because it means that no one has sued since, which would seem strange, or the press isn't covering it, or the rule got changed. But if the rule was changed, why wasn't there any coverage? And so the weirdest part to me is like, I think that this narrative is something that clearly people like having. They get quoted on Reddit. Mm-hmm. They write about it in news articles. But there's been nothing in 21 years to say if it's still out there or not. No one's released anything. So to me, I'm just like, this is very strange that everybody clings to this one anecdote of one trial and is adamant that police have an upper IQ limit and quote it all the time. Mm-hmm. But there's not any actual data to say it's true or not.
The case.
Which is weird because you'd think the police would come out and just have press releases
and
being like, this is
bullshit. Even
in that
particular thing, all that does is, that just is about Connecticut's police department.
Correct.
That would be, if that was 100% true, all that would establish is that at that particular year, that was true of that Connecticut department.
Yeah. So the most, and maybe you haven't heard this, but the most interesting part to me was like, this is a very well known truth, I guess, that there's no one has any evidence that it's true except for in the state of Connecticut in 1999.
Let's call it more, it's more conventional wisdom.
That's what I'm saying.
Whether it's, or like not a, it's true, we don't even know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But if you go on Reddit for anything about cops, you'll see a thousand upvoted comment quoting, well, of course this is what happens when they don't let people with high IQs in. It's like, this might not be true. Like, yeah. There's no...
I don't know what to make of it. I mean, it's could just be, like alligators in the sewers, for all I know.
Yeah, what's strange to me is if that were the case, why isn't there any news about how it's not true?
Well, I could understand... That would be like more Snopes' role. Like there's a lot of...
Sure, Snopes or a press release from police, like, what are they called? Whatever it is, police office. no one's like debunking it either. Mm-hmm. So I just thought it was weird. It's like this weird thing that gets quoted all the time that has no data one way or the other.
Maybe, I don't know. I avoid speaking authoritatively on it because I don't... It might not even be real. So just comment like, that's ridiculous or that's appropriate. But assuming that it is the case and that they do have an upper bound, say, of 115 in some precincts, I don't, because they find that people leave the work, I don't know that I would have a particular, well, I guess I would because you're not, I'm thinking this through real time. We don't have any established laws that prevent discrimination based on intelligence, do we? Not to my knowledge. Like you're allowed... I think that's kind of the point of a job interview in many ways. So yeah, to set an upper limit because you wouldn't be fit for the job seems just as fair as setting a lower limit because you wouldn't be fit for the job. Even though there might be people that would be fine with it. It's like, look, we can't take you all on average because it's just too expensive. That seems like it would be a reasonable thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And having that limit, if it is the case that they did it because people left the job, is not the reason that there's issues with the police because... Those people don't want to be there. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like they tried having them in there. They didn't start kicking them out. If that reasoning is true, then that's not causing the problem.
The other thing I want to talk about, because we talked about IQ privilege before, mm-hmm. for people who haven't seen us talk about that, just the idea that people will focus on privileges in certain areas, but one thing they don't often talk about is that you're just born with a brain that has a certain amount of horsepower.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I found this, because it was like a week or two ago. When it comes to wealth, IQ is actually not the determining factor.
Really?
Yeah. So I think like Jordan Peterson or someone talks about how it's the thing that correlates with success. Mm-hmm. But at least in the reports I was looking at, the individual's location, obviously inherited wealth, race, and schooling are just as correlated as IQ when it comes to determining income.
Interesting. No, I'd be... Certainly location makes sense to me.
So does inherited wealth.
Inherited wealth.
Schooling makes sense. If you just know the person went to a certain school, they're very likely to have a certain income.
Yes.
So like,
because that's correlated with everything else. That's already got it. I'm surprised that IQ doesn't outperform race. And would be curious about.
Well, I think the part of the reason is, and they were talking about this, IQ has diminishing returns. Like the wealthiest people are not the people with the highest IQs necessarily.
Well, also there's the question of like, are you just are you taking, I don't know, Jeff Bezos's kid and then he counts as a billion, you're doing the mean, is it the median? There's a lot of ways to run these statistics mm-hmm. that could be confusing when you're talking about numbers that get so astronomical.
Yes. Well, this is the part that I found the most interesting because I'm someone who often thinks about, wanting the best for your kid. And so one of the things is like, oh yeah, you really want your kid to be really smart. Well,
no, you wanted to be born in Malibu. I can tell you, I'm serious. I can tell you being in Malibu, I don't see higher intelligence that is made obvious to me out here. I see higher pay for everyone. And I'm talking like you go to get a smoothie, it's $18. Like, so that means that the guy who runs a smoothie store is making a lot more money, which means if he wanted to, and I think he does, he can afford to pay the 15-year-olds that are making the smoothie more than they'd be making anywhere else.
No, and I think what you want is a certain amount of horsepower.
Yeah.
I think if, you know, for financial success, if we're just talking about that, if you're at a certain level, it will elude you. But it is not that, you know, if you have 150 IQ, you're guaranteed to make more than almost everyone with 140. And if you have 170, you know, it's like, that's not how it works at all.
Oh yeah, there's totally diminishing returns.
There's been diminishing returns, yeah. So it's like, oh, it's not the smarter, the better. And then I was thinking about for happiness, I don't think IQ correlates to happiness either.
Did you think or did you check this out?
I did not. I did not.
Okay, just curious.
No. I didn't find any people that looked into this. But it certainly, at least in my anecdotal experience, is not my smartest friends or my happiest friends. So for me, I've always on the podcast talked about IQ privilege and how it's something that we don't factor in enough. And it just, in the last couple of weeks, I was just amending, like, it's not something to be aggressively envious of, or, you know, the more the better. It doesn't guarantee you happiness or wealth
to have 160 IQ. It's the same of every other privilege if it implies wealth. It's like, wealth doesn't imply happiness, and there's diminishing returns on that as well. You know, you could talk, and there are, I think part of the, we've talked about this, like the conversation that we should be having is how much are people suffering and how much of that is out of their control, and let's help the people that are suffering.
So this made me realize,
and that might mean that Jeff Bezos needs a hand.
I wonder. Yeah, like, this is what made me realize. I wonder if the number one privilege that we should all be envious of is
happy,
just like a good thermostat in your brain. So we talked about this. I don't know if we ever talked about this on air, but we talk about like your internal thermostat for happiness. How hedonic adaptation always sets you back to your set point. So if you lose your legs or if you win the lottery, you will experience a temporary shift in happiness, but hedonic adaptation, the theory goes that you'll fall very close to where you were before, but everyone has a different set point. And you can do things over time to raise your set point, like gratitude exercises, mindfulness. By the way,
just so you know, like mindfulness. What was that book that was written by Dan Gilbert? They took people, not who lost, who became paralyzed, and they took people who won the lottery, and they measured literally those two cohorts of people and found that there was a regression to the mean after X period of months, and it wasn't that many months. It was less than a year.
And you can raise your set point. I want that, like, if you focus on certain things like mindfulness or gratitude or whatever, you know, there's I've talked about this in the podcast before, actually, the things that raise your happiness set point. But I was realizing that's the number one privilege, I think. It's just naturally, without effort, having a really high gratitude and happiness set point is the number one thing to be envied, I think.
And it is not at all.
No one ever,
like,
talks about it.
Nobody sees that person and goes, it's not fair. It's like especially if that person has a, like, and we've met these people in our life. They have a service job. They're a janitor. They're the person who's like this super cheery service person that you come across. Nobody's like, it's not fair. Like, why can't I have what they have? We've said this 100 times. Yeah, it's the status game, that the things that people want, it appears to be, is status. It's what other people want. We don't want what we want, because what we want in and of ourselves inside our own skin suit is to feel good. But we are aimed at what it seems like everyone else is aimed at. And so we'll want happiness if it looks like other people are valuing happiness, at which point we, like, we'll post all our smiles on Instagram and shit. But the moment that it becomes cool to post your pain on Instagram or what, like, that is the most popular thing.
No, Instagram's a great one too, because I think the happiest people probably aren't active on it.
100%. And that's just from my own life experiences. The less you see me on Instagram, the better I'm doing. You know? Yeah. If I'm on Instagram, there's been a breakup. I'm sad and I'm looking for attention, you know? That's, 100%. I very much agree.
So yeah, that was just my thing. I've always been very high on IQ and how important it is. And I was just realizing, no, it's that internal happiness set piece. Another thing, because I'm really, something I really like other than being happy is longevity. So Peter Attia was on Joe Rogan recently. Did you see it?
Nope.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
I don't see any Joe Rogan anymore, dude.
So I got some interesting things.
I'm not a Spotify guy.
I got some interesting, oh, neither am I. I saw it on YouTube. But I got some interesting things.
Oh, you saw the clips?
Everybody knows that if you smoke, your risk of death goes up, right? He says 2 to 3x, although he doesn't define exactly what this means, but I'm assuming it's something like your odds that you die in your 50s or in your 60s, if they look at the cohort, like what percentage of non-smokers die, what percentage of smokers die, you're 2 to 3 times more likely to die.
On any, I wonder what that statistic means. I would imagine, like, on any given year, that your odds of dying at your age
at
are
your
two
age.
To three times higher.
Yeah.
On average, because I'm sure it's not the same at age 30 as it is at age 60. Anyway, that's a weird
number. Yes, no, I think you go cohort to cohort based on age, and then you look at all-cause mortality of smokers and non-smokers. So this could be lung cancer, it could be heart disease.
It's a tough number to do because at age 40, I bet you it's not 2 to 3 times higher. You know, or age 35, it's not 2 to 3 times higher. Like, it's likely to accrue.
That's what I'm saying. I think my hypothesis is in your 50s or 60s.
Sure, okay.
Yeah. So 2 to 3 times higher, big number, your risk of death from having high cardiovascular fitness goes down by more than your risk of death going up from smoking. So everybody knows smoking is really bad. Don't smoke this and that. No, what he's saying is we all ignore heart, yes. Cardiovascular health.
Oh, it's the number one thing.
And it's he's saying it's the, like, if you think smoking is bad, having a good VO2 max is even more important than not smoking.
I'm a smoker.
And nobody nobody focuses on it. Nobody talks about it. He's talking about all-cause mortality because of how much it affects everything. In terms of, it affects your weight.
I'll go for a run, dude. What do you want me to say?
No, I thought it was interesting. I thought it was really interesting as a guy who likes longevity.
It's ridiculous. The fact, because, I mean, you could tell. I've been mailing it in at the gym, but I still go. But I don't do any of the heart stuff. Yes. I do, like, you know, I dipped in, like, my bench and my stuff, but I hit, like, okay, I can maintain this with minimal effort. So few people do heart. It's incredible.
Yeah. And the other thing
is, also, heart is one of the, I think it's the most fun. Some people disagree.
Yeah.
I fucking hate leg day. Once I get out there and I'm jump roping or on a run, I'm very happy. It's one of those weird things that is, like, so good when you're into it and so good for you, but you can't.
I feel the opposite. I think because I have flat feet. Okay. I find running to be a nightmare. That's why I serve.
Maybe I'll take that up, dude. We live right by the ocean. That's such an easy gimme for me to just improve my life.
So that's why I thought it was interesting, is because I think a lot of longevity people too get lost in the weeds of, like,
all right,
I'm gonna intermittent fast.
I'm gonna give you $100 if I haven't taken a run along the beach next week.
Cool.
By one time.
Justin? Write that down.
Justin, I'm gonna give I take it back. I'm gonna give you $100,
yeah,
Justin.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give you $100. Henry wants some too. Next thing I know, my shoes are gone. I can't. Doors are locked.
You're going to have a Nancy Kerrigan incident.
All right.
Incident.
So if by the next podcast, and all I have to do is get out there for 30 seconds, like, that's it when I'm out there with my shoes. This is, by the way, you guys, people ask me, how do I get myself to do it? This is literally what I do to myself, is I tell a friend that I'll pay him if I don't, and I make it an amount that is affordable, but not going to be fun to give up.
Justin, check in. Check in next week. $100 if he doesn't.
And
do
so
it.
And so you don't have to do $100. Like, when I first started this, my amount was $5 that I would give to people. But I might just give up $5 rather than do the run. So I picked a number.
Well, you had a lot less money in the best.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So I picked a number just a second ago that is, like, I actually don't want to give Justin $100.
Sorry about that.
I want to keep that. That's the sweet spot for me.
Yeah. But I thought it was fascinating because there's so many people who do focus on longevity in the Tim Ferriss style.
Oh, last thing. Justin, it will remember, is the other thing. That's why you tell a friend. Because he's not going to forget. Hopefully. Sorry, go ahead. So many people.
Well, no, I was just saying. So they do intermittent fasting, resveratrol, autophagy, you know what I mean? And he was saying literally the number one thing he recommends if you want to live a long time is 3 hours a week of biking, 4 45-minute sessions.
My mom would love it if I did that. Yeah.
I just thought that was fascinating. It's like, okay, here's Peter Attia, well-regarded anti-cancer
guy. And biking's
guy.
Like low impact. Now, the other thing is, you know, I got to say, every biker I know has had a horrific accident. I don't mean motorbike. I mean,
he
does
stationary bike.
It's hugely different. Like, all of my friends have been destroyed. Like, these city bikers who like bike to work.
Oh, yeah. My uncle is downhill mountain biker, and he's broken his collarbone three times. Yeah. I think
that's going to increase. He does stationary bike,
and you do it a certain way, focus on your VO2 max. I won't listen to the podcast out there. I'm not going to just be a parrot for Peter Attia.
Well, I wonder, and if I can hit my 70, 80, 20, whatever, with just doing more than I'm doing. I jump rope was always fun for me too, but I think because I'm near the ocean, it might be nice to just take a run out there. Cool.
Yeah. So that was interesting because I was there waiting for the life hack. You know what I mean? I was there waiting for the pill I can take or the weird thing no one's heard of.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah. Cardio.
That is, to be fair, that is the thing no one's heard of. I think if you ask people what's the number one cause of death in America, they would not say heart disease. They would say,
well, yeah, we're just being out of shape. Like, yeah. Not being
and
in
it's
good
like, and which of those, fitness. By the way, which of these other ones are compounded by having this? I guess you could even say that, it seems like the things that are really bad for your health, if you just look at the things that kill you, is having a weak immune system, which comes from not sleeping enough and not eating correct and being stressed out and not having like a minimal level of sweat activity in your life. Those seem to be connected to a lot of the leading causes of death. So food is, you know, related to diabetes and stuff like that. But cool.
Yeah. All right. I just thought that was interesting.
I'll go for a run.
And then I got two Charlie Hooper vindications that I found. These are
for these.
Pat yourself on the back.
I live for these, dude. This is my life.
So one was the, I don't actually know how to say it correctly now because you always say it funnily. Latineque.
Latinx. I say Latinx.
Yes, I know. That's so. I was like, how do people say this?
They say so, Latinx. I think it should be Latinx in deference to people who actually speak Spanish.
Yeah.
Or it should be Latinx because that's what it looks like.
So yeah, it was interesting. You've said that this is not something that the people anecdotally that you know who are Hispanic or Latino don't want to be referred to that way and think it's strange because their entire language is masculine, feminine, and a small survey of 800 Hispanic voters was done. They call it a nationwide survey, which just means it's people in every state, but it's only 800 people. Yeah. So I do want to give the devil his due. 68% of people want to be called Hispanic. 21% want to be called Latino or Latina. 2% want to be called Latinx.
Yeah.
40% said they find that term offensive. So I just thought that was interesting because it seems like a bunch of progressive people just tried to rename a group without checking in with them.
Which is like,
they don't necessarily like it.
It's hilarious because part of the ethos behind this is self-identification, right? That you get to label yourself in important ways, except when they don't like that.
Yeah. I was mulling this over. I was like, I guess this term actually isn't meant to make these people feel good.
It's such a dumb term.
It's for trans people who don't want to be gendered.
I don't even think it's for trans people. I think it's for progressive people, and some of whom are at YouTube writing some of the YouTube communications that I see. I don't think it's for even... I actually think a lot of the people doing it are not trans. I think they are progressive. And I think there is... It's part of... This is trite to say. It's ideology is overused. Religion is overused, but it is a religious, all-encompassing worldview to signal one's concern and forward-lookingness to include everybody by saying what people can, in this case, call themselves. Mm-hmm. Now, the idea that a group can say, yes, call me this, is kind of silly overall, but those are pretty... strong indicators of the words that they would like.
Well, that's
what
I thought was interesting. It's the first data I saw was like, people would rather be called Hispanic, apparently.
Well, what's funny, you know, you said that. I didn't realize that because in college, what they taught us was it's not Hispanic. It's actually Latino is the proper term.
Not according to 65% of these 800 people.
Well, no, like Hispanic includes Spain, which is not what you're saying when you do that. You know, you're actually talking about people in the area beneath the United States of America. So it's just funny that there's, you know, that was back in college, taught to me by a white guy. And it's just, you know, the rulings on how this stuff goes. I've always used Latino when I've talked about Spanish speaking area under America because of under the United States of America. That's another thing. You can't say America because it's all the Americas.
Well, that makes sense to me actually.
Sure.
Given that it's South America.
I agree.
I actually understand the United States of America part, but that's not progressive. That's just people saying it's egoic to say that the United States of America is America because there's a whole bunch of other parts of North and South America. Yeah. So I actually understand that one. I can identify with being like, you guys should not say.
I saw somebody in a debate, it was interesting, chide someone for how they pronounced Iran. You know, they said Iran. And they said, it's actually Iran. And then later they were talking about Mexico, and they called it Mexico instead of Mexico.
Yeah, it's just
like, fuck you. You know, and nobody called them on it, but I wish someone had.
Yeah, I wish,
you know, like, oh, we're going to say it like they say it, you know, or you just have the handful that your community thinks is appropriate to say in your best attempt. And I've been that person before, and I try not to, because what it made me realize, it's like, look, I'm mispronouncing shit all the time. I didn't even realize. So every now and then I'll be like, if it's a very common word, I'll try to do someone a favor, but to use that as a way of scoring points.
Yeah.
It's just like, dude, this is going to get turned on you so damn quick by someone that knows a little bit more than you.
Croissant.
Yeah. Croissant. or irregardless, you know, it's actually regardless. And then you'll finish a sentence with a preposition or something 3 sentences later.
Yeah. Ooh, that is a great,
the grammar great Nazis, one. You don't want to be one. You're just going to get screwed every time.
There's a great clip. I think it's Jennifer Garner with Conan, where she calls him out aggressively on a grammar thing. She's like, yeah. You went to Harvard, Conan. You should know that that's not a word.
I've seen it. She's being playful.
But well, yeah. He goes and gets a dictionary.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's all, you love to see those people get their comeuppance. So if you are that person, you just open yourself up for everybody rooting that you get your comeuppance.
Yes. Yes. And you will, because that's the thing with language, is that there's not one right way of doing things. There's, you know, words evolve and mean different things. And I was taught to double space after period, and I was berated if I did a single space.
I still do.
And now people are like, what are you doing? Like, we don't have typewriters anymore.
You gotta do it.
You gotta do it.
I was yelled at.
Yeah.
People would circle when you're writing essays, the space.
Yeah.
With little red circle, minus one. Oh my
God.
This looks like a single space.
Oh
like,
my God.
Fair point.
That happened. That's why I'm so militant about it. Yeah,
teachers would just look at the space in between sentences.
Yeah.
This looks like one space to me.
Oh my gosh. And that just reminded me of when you get like a 3-page paper, 1.5 space, but you could make it squeeze the margins a little. increase that spacing, right. As opposed to writing like another 100 words, which at the time seemed impossible.
Yeah.
There was no possible so
sometimes
way.
You've said everything you need to say. And then the other thing that, you know, just a little pat yourself on the back, because I know you were, and I agree with you.
But by the way, in 10 years when these people have won and it is Latin, Latinx or Latinx, and I'm being thrown in cancel jail, this is the clip they're going to pull.
Yeah.
But today, I'm victorious.
Well, the other one, Reddit had a post about student loan forgiveness, which in the past we've talked about, just not the most effective way to help people. It ignores the people who chose not to go to college because they don't have money and excludes them from the redistribution of wealth. There's a lot of reasons for it. It doesn't fix the problem going forward. You're just helping people today. The interesting thing is Reddit, which is normally pretty left-leaning, I saw all those arguments as the most upvoted comments on this post from AOC about loan forgiveness for student loans. So it made me wonder.
Reassignment. Loan reassignment. That's what we got to call it.
Well, it made me wonder if there's been a changing of the zeitgeist or a changing of the view of that by people. Because even the most left-leaning place that I go to, which is Reddit, people who used to be like, yeah, now seem more critical of it and more desirous of a systemic change that involves lowering the price going forward or redistributing to people who, you know, because they didn't have money, didn't go to college. Like, those are concerns that people are now
raising,
upvoting, which was not the case 2 years ago.
It's tough. There's a lot of ways to interpret that. They could be sock puppet accounts. You know, that the other thing that I always wonder is, like, how much of these online interactions are by Chinese and Russian spies that are trying to foment their frustration within America? What's the actual sentiment? I like to think that would be true. That'd be nice, because I do, and I've said this before, but briefly, I'm for a redistribution of wealth. I think that's one of the worst ways to go about it is to incentivize poor decision-making and basically bail colleges out.
Well, also the people, I mean, I think if you make the cut, people with student loans, those are not the least well-off people in the United States.
Yeah. No, I'd rather.
So if you have a trillion-dollar bailout that only goes to them, you are ignoring some of the people who need it the most.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and what they got for that was somewhere in between like 4 years of having fun, or, you know, at best case scenario, a worthwhile education, which I find, if it was economically viable, that it would be economically viable. Let's put it that way. They wouldn't need the loan that they find themselves in. So it was a poor thing. And it's like, people like, it doesn't solve the problem going forward, but they're looking at it the student side. You got to look at it the college side. It incentivizes these colleges to continue making products do not have a return on their investment. Like, if you are an Amazon FBA seller, which I don't really like this kind of stuff on YouTube, and your people aren't making their investment back, that's immediately understood to be a valid criticism of your offering. Colleges have successfully married themselves to the word education so well that people can say, well, you didn't make any money from it. You go, well, it wasn't about that. It was just about learning. Which I think is goofy, because learning is occurring everywhere. You know, you're learning online, you're learning outside, you learn if you do experiments. And I think if you're going to pay that tremendous amount of money for what you know, I hate to just quote Goodwill Hunting, so I won't, but it seems silly.
Sure.
So yeah, I'm pretty down on colleges, but if you want to go, I support it. And well, we've had people ask us who are in Scandinavian countries. I'm like, yeah, you should go.
I also will say, as someone who's hiring, I get why people look at it, because yeah. You do. I mean, there's a correlation of horsepower and where people are going to college and what their grades are in college that I have seen. So I actually understand why organizations look at it.
You know, what's interesting is there's the one guy that I just talked to who might be watching this. He was a very smart kid. I don't think he went to college. If he did, I'd have to ask. But there's also, it's correlated, and there's plenty of people who
of course, I don't think our ops guy, our right-hand man, went to college.
He started a business.
He dropped out, yeah.
Yeah.
But when I was looking at writers, I will say the best one came from Cornell. Mm-hmm. So it's not a useless metric, I don't think.
Yes. And I think, like I said, what you are paying for is their filtering process.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
That's what more than the education that they receive there. Cool.
All right. I got one thing. I got a question for everyone watching, and then I got an announcement. Question. I'm trying to source my clothes ethically. Okay. We've talked about meat endlessly, but another thing, I'm trying to get a pair of gym shorts that didn't involve slave labor or child labor. If anyone has any recommendations in the comments, I am wide open. I found one brand and it was $150 per pair of shorts that looked like a pair of sweatpants where the legs were just cut off at the knee. So I'm hoping to do better than that. So if anybody has any recommendations for brands of ethically sourced gym shorts, that would be really helpful for me personally.
Very nice.
Second thing, a podcast viewer anonymously donated $1,000 to Charity Water.
What?
I only know it was a podcast viewer because of their comment. They wrote something along the lines of like, I find your arguments for ethical altruism to be compelling, which we only talk about on the podcast. So whoever that is, thank you so much. We had another one who gave $100. Just been crushing it. You sent an email out today.
That came today?
Both came today. $1,000, wow. $100. So incredible. Thank you guys. Just for people who don't know.
That's great. Thank you.
We have, through the podcast and Charisma on Command, through donations and through us donating, raised almost $1 million since we started going for Charity Water, which is insane. And so even though it's a random number, we're trying to get to the million by the end of the year. The way we're doing that is we're going to match any donations. So normally we talk about how $40 gets someone who would not have access to clean water for a year, which is crazy because it's life-changing for that person. It's only $40. We're going to match you till the end of the year. So if you give $20, you basically save someone's life. You get them clean water for 10 years when they wouldn't have had access to it. So that's happening for everyone that's already donated. Thank you so much for our mystery $1,000 donator. Thank you so much. And I just wanted to make that announcement before we get into questions.
Yeah. I will say this is for me and you. That's one awesome. But we've talked about the podcast. We obviously are not making money off of it. And we've talked about, should we continue or not?
I had the same thought when I saw it.
There's these ancillary benefits that have come from it. And I don't just think, not just the $1,000, which is like, is there another way to make that probably faster than doing 100+ episodes of your podcast?
Well, no, but somewhere out there, there's someone who can afford to donate $1,000 that's watching this.
Yeah,
so
we
might become friends with someday.
And because money is very important in friendship. I consider him now a friend, Evan, through, he watched the podcast and then we did our D&D call and he did really good voices and came through that.
If we applied to play or to help us with accents or something. And
so we haven't gotten there yet, but we met a potential D&D editor through this. You know what I mean? His name is Jeremy. So I feel like, and maybe the same thing exists with Charisma on Command, but it's just too big for me to open up like my inbox to those. This is of a size where I've been able to let in and have conversations with some of the people and I've really enjoyed them. So maybe the same thing does exist with Charisma on Command.
Really appreciate all the donations. We can make a lot of positive change in the world.
Cool.
For the Chris CTA, did you mention cost, number of players and all that?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you want to do D&D, do the link in the description, 250 a game, somewhere between 3 and 6 players. So you can do the math depending on how many people you'd like to play with. And it's a whole evening. It's super cool. I recommend checking it out. I've enjoyed it a lot. And we have been working very hard on our own Dungeons and Dragons thing to film and hopefully have out sometime in the new year. We thought we'd have it up by now. There's been some hitches in getting it going, but we're working hard.
If you want to play the same class as me, Be a Blade singer.
Yeah, Ben goes super, like, super.
Be a Blade singer.
What is it? That's very unique and difficult to manage. It's not standard. Cool.
Do we have questions from people in the comments over the last couple weeks?
Yeah, I'll just do one, though, because we have, like, 30 Patreon questions.
Oh, bang, nice. Bang. Sharp haircut, by the way.
Thanks. Wish everyone could see it.
Justin looks good.
If you could solve most of the world's major issues by having the population resulting in a vastly decreased demand for resources, would you? If it meant the guaranteed survival of the species.
It wouldn't, though. It would be horrible. The supply side would be destroyed. Like, what has allowed humans to have as much as we have has been our burgeoning population that allows for the specialization that we had, which increases more for everybody. You would ruin.
But the hypothetical is what if that weren't the case, right? Isn't that the question? What if it did make things better?
It wouldn't. Yeah. I mean, it's,
dude, imagine
it's
there was like
magic,
a glove.
Okay, so there's like a magical genie. There's a magical, yeah. There's but again, that whole thing was ridiculous as well.
Yeah, we killed
killing
all
half animals. Of all life is killing half of all food.
Yeah, that's the problem. So we have half as many people. We also have half as much food.
Yeah.
So.
And the trees were still there when he snapped. I don't understand.
Just as much land.
What do you mean life, Thanos?
The end game is actually just a philosophical debate between Vision and Thanos.
Yeah. Did half my dogs go?
But this guy's question is, if it were, right? You have to assume that it were.
But this has to become magical. There has to be a genie who says, and it's a trade at this point because they're actually not connected. He's like, here's the deal. I will make life amazing for half of the population, but you have to kill half of the others.
Sure. Is that a fair recharacterization of the question, Justin?
Because it doesn't.
I don't think so.
So what are they saying?
What they say is, if it meant the guarantee of the survival of the species, would you be willing to have the population randomly?
Well, no, I'm not convinced that.
I think it would hurt.
You're solving a problem that I don't think exists. Yeah. I'm not in the impression that if the human species ends, the most likely candidate is because we didn't have the population. I think it's an asteroid.
But I'll play this. A genie comes to you and says, I can guarantee the survival of the human race, but the cost for your wish is that I will have to randomly kill half of the people. I would say...
My gut is I'm just going to bank on human ingenuity. I'm good on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, yeah. And no, also, thanks. Like, can you imagine the horror and the trauma of the survivors? Like...
Well, maybe they don't remember. Maybe you're the only person who remembers.
So now you live in a home where, like, it's you, it's me, my brother, and my sister at like 7, 5, and 3, and the parents' bedroom is just empty. And we're like, there were never any parents here. We've been feeding ourselves for ages.
Maybe you go, one nuclear family disappears and another one stays.
No, it'd be
horrifying. My big thing is I'm just willing to bet on human ingenuity. I don't think I need this genie or this
also
trade-off.
Like the way that the universe bounced back after Infinity War was ridiculous, ridiculous. I mean, imagine the situation that I described multiplied over and over and over again, where mommy and daddy are just gone and all of these orphans are out there. I mean, it would have crushed everything. Nuclear reactors I guess some of them can't melt down these days, but yeah, planes falling out of the sky.
They did show that.
Did they?
Yeah.
Did they?
Showed that. I like to think it was like Passover, where it was like every other house. So if you put up the little goat's blood around the door, your house was spared. Thanos just went every other house.
Yeah.
It's just like,
got it.
Your neighbors are gone, but your whole family's still there. It's not kids without parents.
Well, I watched
Smiths down the street are just turned to dust.
There was something that I watched the other day, which is about the Turpin family, which is really sad. This mother and father who would lock their kids inside for their whole life. I forget what this has to do with Thanos. Yeah. But it was related.
Sorry, is that what's the rest of the story?
They locked him. Oh gosh, how is this related? The foster system so these kids have this horrible life. Like they're literally, some of them are chained to their beds for weeks at a time and let out like up to 30 years old. Like, and they have strange accents you've never heard because they've never met another human in their life. They were just these crazy people who locked, I think, like 12 kids inside this house, and they lived in filth, and it was so horrible.
So those kids literally never left the house for 30
Correct.
Years.
Correct. They just had these crazy, horrible parents who would chain them up. And
I wonder why.
I mean, crazy, man. Crazy. Yeah. There's no explanation.
I feel the opposite. Happy 18th, get out.
But then the story is that some of the kids went into foster care and suffered further abuse.
Yeah.
And it's because the foster system, dude, there's not all these people like trying to take in orphaned children. Like, and if you are, God bless you, you're a saint. That's an incredibly difficult thing to do. And you can do your damnedest, but like they just lost their parents. So I guess what I'm saying is you snap some of the parents out of existence. You have all these orphans. They're not going to just get snatched up by loving homes. If they are snatched up
they're gonna get snatched up by people whose kids turned to dust.
It's going
to,
it's not going to go well, dude. So the society that you're imagining, like with the survival of this race, is a miserable one. So definitely not. Definitely, definitely not.
So two no's.
Two strong two no's on that one. No's, yeah. But... fun hypothetical. We used to play these all the time in the basement. Just be like, would you rather fight?
That's true.
A bear with sharp
hands? If you could anamorph into one animal, what would you pick?
Definitely a flyer. Definitely. I was watching a bird just up on the thermals over the beach, just sitting. It wasn't even flapping its wings, just hanging out.
Interesting.
It was the coolest thing ever. Cool.
I think I'm going shark.
Shark?
I like the water, yeah. Also scared of heights, so flying wouldn't do well for me.
Got it, yeah. Is that it?
There's a second part. I don't know if we want to answer it on air, but it's a bonus question. Would you do this randomly or choose which parts of the population got annihilated?
Now I get to choose?
You get to be
a I'd go one by one. I'd go one by one on Facebook. I'd just go start alphabetical. If you have a private profile, you're instantly saved. Public profiles only.
How would I do it? I'd start with my enemies.
Start with Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, and then we'll just go down alphabetically one by one. Yes, no, yes,
you could
no.
do it. You know what I would do? Because I would like all of the A's because they got to go first in line so many times.
The Altmans.
It's like, yeah, how do you like that, Altman?
And I was sorry. You're just going A, just all the first 13 letters of the alphabet dusted.
No, because I'm an H. No, so I was an H, and sometimes they'd do the end of the alphabet, so like, because they'd be like, it's not fair because we always do the A's, and then the Z's would get to go to the front of the line.
So you're going A through G. And then you're going like Z up.
H is first, dude.
Well, whoever asked this question, what's your last name? Now you know if you got turned to dust or not.
Yeah. Cool.
All right, sick. That's all we got.
Great.
Justin, what did you think we were going to say
just
that we couldn't put it on air, Justin?
I loved that question.
Like it was trying to fish for like a genocide answer.
For like some sort of region or race.
Hey, can we get more questions like that? I actually genuinely love them. Seriously.
I got you. All right, we're going to hop over to Patreon now. If you guys would like to join us, Justin, what do we have?
So we're going to be talking about dealing with a control freak, how to measure your own charisma, and then dealing with approach anxiety with women. And we've got 50 of these episodes in the bank. So if you
and
join...
much more than that, right? There's like 27 other questions.
Yeah. So we've got a bunch of questions.
Any question that you want is probably in the Patreon vault at this point.
What we need to do is catalog them. But yeah, so if you'd like to check that out, it's essentially if you like the podcast and want more, we just do it again. But guided by our patrons'
questions.
So if you'd like to check it out, hop on over there, and we hope to see you there. It keeps us going, keeps money in Justin's pocket, and we appreciate all of you for doing it. Either way, see you guys later. Peace.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.